Chapter 11. A few days after Van's arrival, Uncle Dan came by the morning train from town for his habitual weekend stay with his family. Van happened to run into him as Uncle Dan was crossing the hall. The butler very charmingly, thought Van, signaled to his master who the tall boy was by setting one hand 3 feet from the ground and then notching it up higher and higher, an attitudinal code that our young six-footer alone understood. Van saw the little red-haired gentleman glance with perplexity at old Boutin, who hastened to whisper Van's name. Mr. Daniel Veen had a curious manner, when advancing toward a guest, of dipping the fingers of his stiffly held right hand into his coat pocket and holding them there in a kind of purifying operation until the exact moment of the handshake came. He informed Van that it was going to rain in a few minutes. Because it had started to rain at Lodore. And the rain, he said, took about half an hour to reach Ardis. Van thought this was a quip and chuckled politely, but Uncle Dan looked perplexed again and, staring at Van with pale fish eyes, inquired if he had familiarized himself with the environs, how many languages he knew, and would he like to buy for a few kopecks a Red Cross lottery ticket? No, thank you, said Van. I have enough of my own lotteries. And his uncle stared again, but sort of sideways. Tea was served in the drawing room, and everybody was rather silent and subdued, and presently Uncle Dan retired to his study, pulling a folded newspaper out of an inner pocket. And no sooner had he left the room than a window flew open all by itself, and a powerful shower started to drum upon the liriodendron and imperialis leaves outside, and the conversation became general and loud. Not long did the rain last, or rather stay. It continued on its presumable way to Raduga or Ladoga or Kaluga or Luga, shedding an uncompleted rainbow over Ardis Hall. Uncle Dan, in an overstuffed chair, was trying to read with the aid of one of the dwarf dictionaries for undemanding tourists, which helped him to decipher foreign art catalogues, an article apparently devoted to oystering in a Dutch-language illustrated paper somebody on the train had abandoned opposite him, when an abominable tumult started to spread from room to room through the whole house. The sportive dackle, one ear flapping, the other upturned and showing its gray-mottled pink, rapidly moving his comical legs and skidding on the parquetry as he executed abrupt turns, was in the act of carrying away, to a suitable hiding place where to worry it, a sizable wad of blood-soaked cotton wool, snatched somewhere upstairs. Ada, Marina, and two maids were pursuing the merry animal, but he was impossible to corner among all the Baroque furniture as he tore through innumerable doorways. Suddenly the whole chase veered past Uncle Dan's armchair and shot out again. "Good Lord!" he exclaimed on catching sight of the gory trophy. "Somebody must have chopped off a thumb!" Patting his thighs and his chair, he sought and retrieved, from under the footstool, the vest pocket word book, and went back to his paper, but a second later had to look up Grote, which he had been groping for when disturbed. The simplicity of its meaning annoyed him. Through an open French door, Dak led his pursuers into the garden. There, on the third lawn, Ada overtook him with the flying plunge used in American football, a kind of rugby game cadets played at one time on the wet, turfy banks of the Goodson River. Simultaneously, Mademoiselle La Riviere rose from the bench where she had been paring Lucette's fingernails, and pointing her scissors at Blanche, who had rushed up with a paper bag, she accused the young slattern of a glaring precedent, namely, of having once dropped a hairpin in Lucette's cot. Un méchant long. Comme ça qui faillit blesser l'enfant à la fesse. Marina, however, who had a Russian noblewoman's morbid fear of offending an inferior, declared the incident closed. Nechoroshaya, nechoroshaya, sobaka, crooned Ada with great aspiratory and sibilatory emphasis, as she gathered into her arms the now luteless but completely unabashed bad dog.